We've reached the 5 o'clock hour on a Thursday. Thus, let's get our view from the north. Doing his thing, NBC Northwest. NBC Sports Northwest is probably a better name, more accurate. Online, NBCSports.com/Northwest. He's writing, he's got videos, he's talking Ducks. You can follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, welcome to the big program. How are you?
I'm a little under the weather, man. My son got me sick.
Really? Did you get your flu shot?
It's not the flu. It's not that bad. I did not get my flu shot, though. I probably should have, but it's not the flu, thank God. But, yeah, I just have a cold. So I'm a little, if I sound a little weird, that's why.
Yeah, I could say you're a little off. What a are you questionable for tonight's game?
No, I've been upgraded to probable for Talking Ducks tomorrow. I was doubtful as of last night, but my wife's a pharmacist, so, you know.
Oh.
She got me on the right drugs.
Nice. So let's start with this. Last night, LeBron passes Jordan into fourth on the scoring list.
Boo!
So I'm going to run a theory by you. Let me know what you think. Let's view all the greatest players in the conversation, NBA history, as Heisman candidates. I say any legit NBA analyst who doesn't have Michael as the first greatest ever would have him second. So let it be LeBron, Kareem, Magic, Wilt, or whoever. They would end up with a lot of, like in the Heisman voting, thirds, fifths, fourths, and sixth. So I say in a vote with the people who know the NBA the best, with Michael getting mostly ones and mostly twos, he would win in a landslide. What do you think?
I agree. I can't imagine where Jordan wouldn't win that vote, especially since there's still a lot of old school NBA observers alive. I'm worried that in 30 or 40 years, when the younger generation has taken over, that might change because all of the LeBron love out there. But, you know, this whole scoring thing, man, Jordan went to college for 2 years, and then he left the NBA for 2 years. That's four whole years of scoring he could have done before he left the Bulls at 30, I think it was 35, 36, whereas right where LeBron is now. So, you know, passing Jordan when Jordan's average per game is 3 or 4 points more per game doesn't mean anything to me. It's just like I think he passed him in playoff scoring a couple years ago as well.
Right.
And he had played way more playoff games than Jordan had. So, you know, to me, it's a hollow number. He can have it.
Well, he's got it, and that's what he's got. NBA, again, preseason, I think the consensus was, come on, nobody's beaten Golden State 4 of 7. Leading up to the All-Star break, they went on a tear. Then it was like, oh, and they're going to be the one seed. Out of the break, they've been 3 and 4. They lost at home by 20 again. That's 5 times this year they lost by more than 20 at home, more than the 4 seasons previously combined. Is there any reason to alter course and think, you know, maybe they're not the lock we think they are, or is it, come on, come playoff time, they get it.
They still have the best record, don't they?
Yeah.
There you go. So they still have the best record, and this happens with all dynasties. The further they get into it, they aren't as potent in the regular season. It happened with both Bulls dynasties. The three-peat years were not, the third title in both three-peats were not, they were not nearly as good record-wise or in the playoffs as they were the previous two. One, you get a little older, you get a little wear and tear. Two, you know, other teams improve and figure out ways to come at you and combat you. And during the regular season, you just don't take it as seriously. Like, if someone said to the Warriors at the beginning of the year, if you guys win 75 games, you all get a $20 million bonus, they would win 75 games. But they don't have that incentive to do that, so they don't care as much. So you're going to go out, you're going to lay some eggs, you're going to have some bad nights, but at the end of the day, they have the best record. And come playoff time, when it matters most, I still can't buy anyone beating them 4 times in 2 weeks.
No, neither could I. I just wanted to see if you'd altered course at all.
I'll be rooting against them every step of the way.
Oh, of course. Well, that goes without saying. as feeling under the weather like you do, don't even waste your breath with stuff like that. I know you're a big-time football guy. You played collegiately. You coach. You've been a beat writer, a columnist, an analyst. But this time of year, March Madness, I know as a Cubs fan you're looking forward to the season, NBA playoffs in just over a month. Where does this time of year rate for you on kind of the sports menu?
I would say the period between the Super Bowl ending and the playoffs, the NBA playoffs and the start of the regular season for baseball, that month or so, is sort of a relaxed time. I'm not a big regular season NBA guy. You can kind of smell the playoffs coming up in about 6 weeks, 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And Major League Baseball, like you said, is going to start end of this month, the 26th or 27th.
Yeah, three weeks from
this
today.
This month, to me, it's just sort of like I'm regenerating myself, you know, recharging my batteries post-Super Bowl and just sort of in a lull right now. I'm not really watching much. I'm not paying attention to much. But, you know, things will pick up for me once April rolls around.
All right. Talking with Aaron Fentress for NBC Sports Northwest. Back to some football. You know, one of the big stories has been Kyler Murray. Now we know his height, his hand size, his favorite pizza, what he wore to his prom. You know the game. You've got connections with scouts, and the game has changed. Is he top pick worthy? Is he top 10? What do you make of his game transferring to Sundays?
Isn't it fascinating that we're now to a point where a 5'10 guy could be the number one pick in the draft, that quarterback?
It's crazy. It's unfathomable. Years ago.
Yeah, the evolution of sports is always fascinating, and this is one of them, one of the examples. But the bottom line is that the game has changed so much, and teams are much more spread out. They operate much more out of the shotgun, and you can move the quarterback around more, and the teams are attacking defenses differently. They're adopting things from the college game. And that makes a guy like Kyler Murray so valuable, and his height not matter as much. As long as he can operate from the pocket at a certain level, and then you can do all the other things you can do with him, then I think you can be fine. And I think Russell Wilson has been that roadmap. Russell Wilson's 5'10", and he went in the third round. If Russell Wilson were coming out today, even not knowing what he was going to be with what he had done at Wisconsin, he would be a higher pick just because the game has changed so much. I think Kyler Murray owes Russell Wilson a debt of gratitude for what Russell Wilson has done for the position and all these coaches who are doing different things offensively than they were 15, 20 years ago. But, yeah, I mean, I could totally see him being a success. Now, I will say that, you know, if you get against a – here's what I want to see. When he plays against a really good team that can do things defensively to mess with him and get those 6'5", 6'6", guys coming at him fiercely and keep him in the pocket, could that be an issue? Now, for Wilson, it hasn't been. It'll be interesting to see if Kyler Murray can adjust to that because defenses are not just going to let him run around.
Right.
He's not going to be able to run amok like he did in college. He's going to have to stick in that pocket and throw with a bunch of big guys coming after him. So it'll be a challenge, but we'll see.
As for Oregon football, I've been a big Justin Hollins guy, but, you know, I also don't see the other 50 really good guys at his position across the country,
right.
You know, size, strength, playmaker. You wrote about him. What are you hearing, starting with, you know, how he impressed at the combine and maybe what position does he play in the league?
Yeah, he's definitely the duck on the rise for sure. I would say he did the most for himself in the combine at his size, 6'5", 248, running a 4.51, 4.50, 40, was impressive. He did well in everything else as well. So he's definitely, you know, the classic athletic specimen. But, you know, this wasn't a guy who necessarily was a dominant pass rusher at Oregon. It's not like he racked up 14, 15 sacks a year. And he did show in the East-West Shrine game that he can play linebacker because they were playing a 4-3 in that game. He played outside linebacker there and you know, looked like a true linebacker with 10 tackles, 2 sacks, and, you know, 3 tackles for loss. So I think he's a guy that's – they list him as at edge at the combine. I hate this new edge thing. But basically, you know, the edge is basically what Oregon would always call the drop end.
Right.
When Aliotti and Pelham were there, like Deion Jordan, Tony Washington, Christian French, Rowe, those guys were like that drop – that linebacker who was in his hand on the ground was coming off the edge pass rushing.
Right.
He definitely could be one of those guys, and I think he showed he can play true linebacker as well. So I think it's going to be whatever a team wants him to be. But the fact that he looks like the guy who can do either or is going to make him super valuable. And then the fact that he's super athletic, a team is going to be like, man, let's get this athlete in and let's coach him up, and we can make him maybe into someone elite because of his athleticism ability. So, yeah, he definitely helped himself. The rest of the guys, you know, I think Mitchell did about what you would expect. But there's such a deep group of receivers that I still see him fourth, fifth round. Same thing with Amadi. And Jones, I thought, fell a little bit because he didn't perform that well athletically. But he does have the length, and he looks like a true pass-rushing defensive end. But he didn't sort of grade out athletically like that, like you'd hoped him to. So I think he may have dropped a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because Jelks, I think when 2017 started, there was kind of a buzz that he was going to be like a breakout playmaker, kind of be the new terror crash in the pocket. He didn't, and then the switch flipped later in the year. He was really good, and then last year he was terrific. We got some one-on-one time with him this year. He's a terrific young guy, so...
Yeah.
I mean, is he just a textbook rush end, or what do you make of him at the pro level?
It's hard because I looked at him as like a true 4-3 defensive end, or you know, an edge guy and a 3-4. If they want to just say, okay, you're going to pass rush, you're not going to do as much dropping into coverage, although he maybe can do that, maybe he can't. But running a 4.92, like, you want more speed at that spot. Like, that's the speed you'd expect. Like, there were guys, if you look at the combine list, there were guys running 4.9 at 290, 295. Oof. And Jelks, I think, is listed at 260, 265. So, you know, if you're 260, 265, you better be running, you know, more in the 4.65, 4.7 range. 4.92, not really good. Like, you'd almost say, well, maybe put on 30 pounds and go to a 3-4 defensive end where you're not asked to be as athletic. So that's why I wonder if he really hurt himself, because at 265, you have to show some really unique athletic skills, and he didn't really show that. So I worry that maybe he probably fell. Because one scout told me they saw him maybe second, third, and now maybe he might not be in fourth or fifth. But he has a pro day coming up, so maybe he can improve his 40.
He just has always seemed to me, the 2 years I got to spend some one-on-one time with him, he's a really easy guy to root for.
Oh, definitely.
Let's wrap with Oregon basketball. They third straight blowout win. They're over 500 in league. I'm always going to say this is the season that could have been if Bull was healthy with another five-star. Even if they beat Washington and get to the league tournament final, they're probably not enough for an at-large. But, Aaron, if they win, you know, that'll put them about 20 wins, probably in the NIT. With all that went wrong, if you add that all up, I mean, what do you make of this team this season? They've been all over the place.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate. King got off to a slow start, then you lose Bobo. You wonder if you'd had both those guys all season, how much better they would have been. But then again, they were freshmen. How much further would they really have carried you? I don't know. Defensively, they've been playing really well the last few games, which is why they've won the last three. But prior to that, you know, they got smoked by a couple teams. So they've just been up and down, heckle and jive.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Jekyll and Hyde. See, I'm sick. I told you.
I was going to tell you, that sounds like the medication.
Heckle and jive. That's when you know you're cold, getting to your head. But I said this on Talking Ducks, I think, 2 weeks ago, though. If you look at the team, they've got, I think next year they're going to return 3 4-star guys who are freshmen this year and playing. And then they're going to bring in 3 or 4 more 4-star guys and another 5-star guy. If King comes back for a sophomore year, then you're looking at having a load of 4 and 5-star guys who are going to be freshmen and sophomores that you hope that the sophomores take a huge jump, and then maybe you could actually make some noise next year. The problem is, you know, when you get these 5-star kids in, they like to be 1-and-done or even 2-and-done, and it's hard for you to build something consistently. And this group doesn't have those juniors and seniors who are former 4-star kids who have risen to be elite-level players. And so that's where they've fallen off. Whereas when they went to the Final Four, you had Brooks as a junior who became elite. You had Dorsey who just, you know, hit his peak at the time of the tournament. You had Boucher. You know, you just had a bunch of guys who matured at the same time. Whereas they haven't been able to put that together last year and this year. But maybe next year's the year when they're able to do that if King comes back. If King doesn't come back, I think it's going to be a lot of the same. I think they're going to be young and athletic and talented, but not ready to really make a run.
All right. By the way, if memory serves correctly, didn't Heckle and Jive open for Michael Jackson on the 87 Bad Tour?
I think Heckle and Jive from something. I think someone did a parody with Heckle and Jive before. Anyway,
I gotta check that out.
Oh no, Men at Work. I think Men at Work had a song called Heck. Wait, it was the story of Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive. Remember that?
It's starting to sound familiar, or I don't know. Maybe I'm medicated. Heckle and
Snide. No,
Men at
Work did that. Ah, see, I knew it was something in my head. It's I used to be a big Men at Work fan back in the day.
Folks, he's Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest, online NBCSports.com/Northwest, on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Go easy on the medication, feel good, and we'll catch up next week.
All right, thanks, man.
Take it easy.